racks that are fully loaded with experiments and with cargo, and the additional 400 pounds that we put on the aft end cone internally.
The shuttle astronauts will take the module and snap it onto the space station like a temporary room so it can be unloaded. For NPR News, I'm Pat Duggins in Orlando.
The Senate has convened for the lame duck session of Congress, with the House to follow later in the week. A key focus will be proposed federal help for the struggling U.S. auto industry. The White House says while it supports some help, it should not come from the $700 billion financial rescue plan. White House Press Secretary Dana Perino says the administration does share concerns from many that the industry not be allowed to collapse. Senate Democrats are planning to attach an auto bailout to a bill extending unemployment benefits. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910. Support for today's broadcast comes from the Prairie Ensemble, presenting Haydn's Mass in Time of War at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, November 22nd at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. Featured will be tenor Gerald Sienna, bass baritone Ronald Headland, and the Bach Chorus. Ticket information is at 355-9077 or prairieensemble.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning show, morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls this morning. We're also happy to have back here on the program once again Dr. Suzanne Troopin. She is an obstetrician and gynecologist. She has practice here in our area. And for quite a while now, she has been stopping by on a regular basis. We're now doing the show every other month. She stops by here to talk about women's health and to answer questions. She usually comes prepared to talk about a couple of things, but of course anything that is within her area of practice. And we've talked about a lot of things over the years, things like contraception and birthing and menopause and just about anything else that has specifically to do with women's health. I know that if you have questions, she would do her best to give you an answer. We'll also always try when we have physicians on the program. Maybe people get tired of me saying this, but always try to remind you that we cannot do diagnosis over the phone. There are some limits as to what we can do, but here's the next thing I always say. I don't want to discourage people from calling. We try to do these shows as a way of helping add to your knowledge about health. It can be a first step, and then, of course, you got some concerns. You definitely want to go and pursue those with somebody who can see you. But you can start here, and I know the doctor would do her best to help you with whatever questions you have. So with that, we'll give you the telephone numbers here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. At any point here, you're certainly welcome to call. Well, thank you very much for being here once again. We appreciate it.
Good morning.
And you said you thought maybe one of the things you might like to talk about here to start out with a little bit is infertility, which I'm sure is a big part of what you do at your practice.
Oh, absolutely. We think that anovulation, or not having regular menstrual periods, which are preceded by a fertile ovulation with a fertile egg, accounts for somewhere between 20 and 60% of all of infertility. We're never exactly sure because we can't always measure whether or not there was a fertile egg in each cycle that a woman has, but it's definitely one of the most important causes of infertility in our patient population, and probably the cause of that. And ovulation is linked to various conditions, but probably polycystic ovarian condition is one of the more important causes of anovulation. But there are other causes as well, causes that are related to the fundamental reasons that the menstrual cycle works in the first place. And we have now been involved with a new research study that is really a dramatic breakthrough, and we are going to be offering GnRH pulse therapy in a patch. So always before, actually, GnRH pulse therapy has been available in the United States for about 25 years through intravenous treatments or injection treatments or implantable needles. And now there is a new kind of patch therapy called ionophoresis and a patch that will be able to deliver pulse therapy over a three-week period of time in a very simple way to treat women who have irregular menstrual periods and are having infertility.
So it's not that they don't have eggs and that the eggs aren't healthy and that the structures are – there's any problem with the sperms and eggs getting it together. It's just a matter of the regular release of the egg that's supposed to happen is for some reason, and I guess there can be a variety of reasons, it's not happening.
Right. And most of these women will have irregular periods. So they'll have cycles that are more than 45 days apart. In fact, some of these women won't have cycles at all. They'll come in and they won't have had a menstrual period for a year or two. Most of the patients will probably have periods every month and a half, every 2 or 3 months, something like that. Those are the patients that are most ideally suited for this patch therapy and will be eligible for this brand new clinical research study. Mm-hmm. And the treatment's called the Lutra patch.
And is this refined enough so that you make – so when you get a release of an egg, you only get one? Or is there a possibility that you could end up with multiple
Well, there's more than one issue. One is the multiple pregnancy issue, and the other is the overstimulation of the ovary. And other fertility drugs have been associated with overstimulation of the ovary, such that even fertility cycles had to be abandoned, or the ovary would be so overstimulated that it would lead to medical problems, and in addition to the problems with twinning and triplets and higher what they call higher order multiples, meaning more than triplet pregnancies. But this therapy is brand new, so it's going to be what's called a phase two clinical study. So we are going to be carefully looking at those issues, but we are anticipating both a adverse event rate with the ovarian overstimulation and the multiple pregnancy rate to be very low.
Mm-hmm. We do have a caller here. Someone wants to call in. Let us find out what's on their mind. Someone calling at Woodridge, which is apparently near Naperville, Illinois, up in the northern part of the state. So we'll talk with them here on line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I had a question about polycystic ovarian disease. I have it, and I understand it's a fairly uncommon disease. And I was wondering, how does that affect trying to get pregnant?
Well, we think that polycystic ovarian condition is a spectrum of illnesses. So some women have the very mildest form, so that they have just essentially cystic ovaries and really almost no other consequences of the condition. And other women have what some people would call the full-blown condition. They have high male hormone levels that are made by either the adrenals or the ovary. They have elevated cholesterol. They have high blood pressure. They have insulin resistance. They have difficulty with their menstrual cycles. They have trouble conceiving. They have cystic ovaries as well. Really, evidence of the elevated male hormone, so essentially a full-blown condition. And then many women have something in the middle. And depending on the spectrum of your condition, probably correlates with whether or not you're likely or not very likely to have infertility. So that we think that the overall incidence of infertility with polycystic ovarian condition is probably in the 10 to 20% range of everyone with polycystic ovarian condition, and polycystic ovarian condition in the general population is probably something like 5 to 6%. So not all that uncommon, but in that range. But to give somebody specific information, it would depend on on you and how frequently you ovulate and what your own hormone levels actually are.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Our guest this morning is Dr. Suzanne Troupin. She is an obstetrician and a gynecologist. She's on the program every other month on a Monday, and we talk about women's health, and questions are certainly welcome. Just out of curiosity, you're talking, I'm sure that you work with people who are trying to conceive and are having a difficult time. And I'm sure that there can be many reasons. So you have to start out by trying to assess their physical condition and try to find out what's going on. I'm just wondering if, just in terms of the most basic things that you can do in terms of timing, of just simply timing when you have intercourse. Is that in fact critical enough so that small differences in time can actually make a difference?
We think that in general, an egg lives for approximately 24 hours and sperm live for approximately 72 hours. And that's where the old adage, have intercourse approximately every other day while you're trying to get pregnant, works for most couples. The recent information is that if the sperm is present as you release that egg, you're more likely to conceive than if you are playing catch up and that the egg's already there when the sperm's trying to swim and find it. But that's very general terms. And yes, we think that for some couples where the sperm count is very borderline, or if they have very infrequent intercourse and suddenly now they're trying to have intercourse every single day, they might have sperm depletion before they get egg release. And that's where these over-the-counter kits, which detect your LH surge from the pituitary gland, actually can help quite a bit. In fertility timing, that's one thing that we do look for. And actually, having sex is a problem that couples face who are infertile. And we do, as well as working out the actual medical problems dealing with fertility, sometimes we have to work out the sexuality issues, because some couples trying to conceive really aren't having enough sex to conceive.
I see. Okay. I wonder how it gets back to this issue that maybe that there are a number of things you can do. There's various kinds of therapies that you can use, and there's medications you can use, and all of that, you know, gets into more sort of advanced technology. I guess I still find myself wondering whether there are all kinds of more low-tech kind of things say, oh, well, first of all, let's talk about this and this.
Well, and first of all, being realistic as to how long the timing should take you, so that on the average, we have about a 20% rate of infertility in our population. But it takes about a third of couples 3 months to conceive. It takes about half of all couples 6 months to conceive. We think that if you are under the age of 35, waiting for that full year to see if you become pregnant and see if you're in the 80% that will conceive in that first year, that's reasonable. If you're over the age of 35 and you haven't conceived in 6 months, we think you should start looking into it and getting that first semen analysis, checking on the patency of your fallopian tubes, checking on your ovarian age, because your chronological age and your ovarian reserve age may or may not be the same thing, are places that we look. And that's one nice thing about participating in a fertility study. Not all insurance plans cover for these early fertility tests, and some of these tests can be a little bit costly. And when patients participate in tests, those tests are usually covered.
Yeah. Do you think that most people would actually be surprised by the idea that you could be having regular unprotected intercourse for 6 months and still at that point not have conceived?
Oh, absolutely. And the flip side, for some people, they think, oh, it's just once, I don't need to use contraception.
And of course, we know
it works
that
both ways.
Yeah, exactly so. Yeah, all right. Well, we have some other callers here. Let's talk with somebody on a cell phone. This is our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hi. My call is about cystocele, and I wonder if Dr. Truppen could talk about some of the causes and treatments, including things that would be non-surgical, and I'm going to hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right.
Well, the cystocele is generally a hernia of the bladder into the anterior, the top wall of the vagina, and it can be mild, moderate, or severe. And in the mild condition, usually no treatment is necessary. But as with any pelvic floor defect, it can sometimes be accompanied by other pelvic floor defects like a urethrocele or rectocele or lateral pelvic wall defects. So it's important to have an examination. You may have a prolapse of the uterus, and there may be other conditions like stress incontinence that need to be addressed. So first, it's important to get a diagnosis. And in terms of correction, it depends on what's wrong. If it's due to inherent weakness due to childbirth, or stretched out muscles, Kegels exercises can help. There are pelvic floor therapies such as biofeedback or other kinds of pelvic floor therapies that can help. There are cones that you can wear. Those things do help. There are actual pessaries. Pessaries are actually devices that are designed to be worn on a daily basis, and they come in many different sizes and shape, and they can essentially just hold everything back in place where it's supposed to go, and that's non-medical. There's not any actual medication that can fix the cystocele, and if it gets to the moderate or severe stage, many women usually elect to have that corrected by surgery.
Okay. Again, I hope that helps. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And next we'll talk with someone here in central Illinois where we are. This is line number one. Hello.
Yes, I'm interested in knowing what are some of the side effects and how common are B-complex deficiencies in elderly females?
Well, B-complex usually refers to any one of the B vitamins. And as we get older, our digestive system is such that we don't always absorb B12. And if we get very deficient in B12, we can get a certain type of anemia. We also can be low in folic acid. We can also be low in B6. And if we are low in all of them, the symptom complex can be a little bit difficult to ascertain. And depending on whether we're supplementing one without supplementing the other, we can precipitate deficiencies. This was one of the controversies about supplementing foods with folic acid, because if we supplement foods with folic acid and we don't have ability to get enough B12, then we can precipitate a B12 deficiency in older individuals. Doesn't tend to happen much in younger individuals, but various weaknesses, various neurologic conditions like numbness, muscle aches, things like that can be symptom of these deficiencies. Actually, we have very accurate tests for all these vitamins, and if there's a symptom complex that your healthcare provider thinks is attributable to any B vitamin, they can actually do fairly accurate B testing. Thiamine's another B vitamin, but not so many physicians really test for that as much, and deficiency of thiamine isn't as common in our population.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. And to someone else here, this is line number two, and the caller is in Champaign. Hello.
Yes. 30-some years ago, I was having trouble getting pregnant, and I was prescribed Clomid. Does that stimulate ovulation?
Yes. Clomid is essentially a SERM, a selective estrogen receptor modulator, and it works in a couple of different ways. These compounds have some in some sense, will bind to the estrogen receptor and activate it. In some senses, they will bind to the estrogen receptor and inactivate it. So it's a anti-estrogen with weak estrogenic properties. And we do still use it. It's very inexpensive medicine, and it's a nice treatment to begin a fertility treatment with. Usually in anovulatory fertility, it has about a 50% success rate, and the conception rates are sort of all over the map. They're somewhere between 10% per cycle in some studies, all the way up to 60 or 80% per cycle in some studies. So pick a number somewhere in the middle of that. The multiple pregnancy rate with Clomid, the generic is clomiphene citrate, but it comes as Clomid or Seraphine. But anyway, everybody calls it Clomid, but Clomid's actually technically a brand name. But the multiple pregnancy rate's about 8%. Some physicians have also used an HCG injection to trigger an ovulation right as a follicle becomes mature with it, but we don't always have to do that. And it has sort of become the gold standard as the first-line therapy for treating ovulation disorders. And in many studies, that's what they compare new therapies to.
Okay, I guess my concern was that at some point I heard that this was, that having taken this, it was dangerous for female offspring. And but that must not be the case if you're still using it,
Oh, no, there's not been that. There was sort of a brief scare. We know that if we suppress ovulation, you have a lower risk of ovarian cancer in the long run of your life. So there was sort of a brief scare with thinking that, well, if we've overstimulated ovulation, does that, on the flip side, increase your risk of ovarian cancer? And there were many years where Clomid was the only medicine we had, and we gave it to women for years and years and years, literally cycle after cycle, because it's all we had. And they did some studies, and there were some early look-back studies that thought that there was an association with ovarian cancer that was completely disproven. And maybe that's what you sort of heard about. But I've not heard of any studies with problems with female offspring. There was a miscarriage treatment with high doses of estrogen with a drug called DES-diethylstilbestrol. It's an estrogen, good estrogen, but it probably worked a little bit for miscarriage. And I don't think that was ever really well established, but it was an Eli Lilly drug. So it was manufactured in Indianapolis, and the Chicago area was actually sort of a center for handing out DES. And that did have some consequences for people, for the female offspring, if a mother had taken that drug when she was pregnant, but not Clomid.
I may possibly have taken that. We lived in Indianapolis during the time of my first pregnancy, and I was having some problems, you know.
Well, you're a little young for that, but maybe.
Oh, no, I'm not.
it was kind of my mother's generation. It would have been your mother's generation, but maybe.
About 1970. And we lived
It was more the 50s. It was used more in the 50s.
Okay, so I'm probably safe for that then.
Probably. In the 70s, there were some cases. There were, but not so many. But if you have any idea that you were ever exposed to DES, there is a registry, and you could contact Eli Lilly and try to find out when the last doses were given.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Thank you. We are close to our midpoint here of this hour of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Suzanne Troopin. She is an obstetrician and a gynecologist. She has practice here in our area. Every other month on a Monday, she's here. We talk about women's health and questions, of course, are welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back to your comments about vitamin B deficiencies. My daughter and I have a, she's 18, 19, I guess now, and informing herself wonderfully about women's health. But she tells me that she thought she had learned that taking a multiple vitamin, just a daily multiple vitamin, will be more likely to somehow invalidate the vitamins in the food that you eat. And I said, I don't think so. That doesn't sound right to me. But then you're talking about folic acid in somehow precipitating an imbalance of other B vitamins. So I thought I would ask for her. Is she right about that? Taking multiple vitamins somehow do something bad with what food you eat?
Not that I know of for an 18-year-old. No, and actually, usually for most teens, it does a good job of filling in for some imbalances in the way we eat and the way we calorie count. And usually for our lifestyle, we have to get our calorie counts down low enough because we're so sedentary with computers and so forth and our Blackberries or whatever we do with ourselves that in order to really get all the nutrients in that we need, if we were to do it strictly through food, it usually leads to too many calories.
So you think that there's no reason not to take a multiple vitamin?
If you really had a perfect diet, you could certainly have excellent nutrition without a multiple vitamin. But the other thing that we always have to consider is a lot of our food, it really isn't that fresh, and it's transported, and some of the cooking processes don't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say in general, she probably eats better than your average teen. She also runs. But, you know, because she has fresh tomatoes on her roast beef sandwich instead of eating out at McDonald's, you know, doesn't really change a whole lot of use of a vitamin, multiple vitamins still, I think, something that you should take. And so we've been having this debate. It doesn't invalidate any of the food you're eating?
Not that I am aware of.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have certainly time for other calls. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Our guest is Dr. Suzanne Troopen, and we do this program every month to give you the chance to ask questions about women's health. Just now, I've been thinking here, you're talking earlier, kind of when we started out talking about fertility, and I was still thinking about the statistic you said that half of couples trying to get pregnant would still not have conceived after trying for 6 months.
Correct.
So I guess then my question is, well, at what point after trying
okay, that's a general figure. Uh-huh. And so are we talking about a couple in their 20s? Are we talking about a couple in their 40s? Is there anything else going on? Are we really trying? Are we doing timed intercourse? Those sorts of things. And that will maximize your chances. But just on the average, for an average couple in the United States, 6 months, just sort of, let's not use birth control and see what happens.
Yeah, okay.
Could be 6 months.
So assuming you have people are healthy and relatively young and they're having intercourse every other day.
Sure.
And doing other things that they can do, the timing. So then you're saying, well, okay, if you go along, you're doing that after 6 months and you're still not pregnant, then it maybe might be worth then having a consultation with your doctor and sort of talk about what's going on and what else you might do.
Right. Yeah. And then usually the simple things that we try, we get people to we will do a history course, and I didn't go into this earlier, do some basic pregnancy planning, talk about whether there are any other special things that we should get in line, vaccinations, any blood work that you might need, any genetic history in your family, whether or not you should be on vitamins, that sort of thing. And then specifically with the fertility aspect, we start talking about, is there anything you're doing sexuality-wise that might be interfering? Are you using any kinds of lubricants, or maybe you were treating yourself for a yeast infection and medications like that can actually potentially interfere? And we go through simple things that you can do to detect when you're ovulating, or we look at your menstrual cycle and decide whether or not it's a cycle that's compatible with regular ovulation. Simple things like that. And on the early side, we try to do a semen analysis as well.
Okay. Next, let's talk with somebody else here. We have a caller in Champaign. This is line number one. Hello.
Yes, I have a polycystic ovarian syndrome, and I was able to get pregnant with ovarian surgery and then hormone treatment following that. But I heard something about a pulse therapy earlier, and I wanted to know if that would help people with polycystic ovarian syndrome, and if not, if there was anything else.
Well, there are multiple treatments that we think that work for women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it depends on what their pathology really is and what their hormone levels are. And we do use treatments like metformin. We do use treatments like clomiphene therapy, which we were talking about earlier. There are more advanced ovulation therapies that we have tried. And yes, our GnRH patch therapy that will be delivering pulses of GnRH therapy for women with polycystic ovarian condition who also have irregular periods are eligible for this research trial. And we think that it will successfully help these people get pregnant. We think in this group of women that have irregular periods, it may be as high as 60% to 70% of them will be having problems with fertility. And yes, we think that this therapy will work to help them conceive. And that's what this very early study is designed to find out.
Great. And could I have that information again about how to find out about that therapy?
I work at Women's Health Practice, and our phone number is 217-356-3736. And the woman who is head of our research division is Felisa Daniels. And if you just call our general number and ask for the clinical research division, or just say you're interested in any research study, you'll probably get put through to Felisa, and she can give you information about when we're holding information meetings or when you can have an individual appointment or talk to you about whether you qualify for anything. If it's not one thing, sometimes it's another.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Right, thank you. And again, other questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Were there some other things that you wanted to talk about specifically having to do with infertility?
Well, we've had many breakthroughs in the areas of endometriosis. We don't currently have any clinical trials enrolling, but it's been very exciting as we have concluded some of our studies. There's actually been five different medications that we have worked with in the area of endometriosis treatment. And I think this is still an area that needs a lot of work because it's just a particular problem, not only for women who are trying to get pregnant, but as a primary cause of chronic pelvic pain and disability. And it's a condition that actually begins in the teen years. The average delay of diagnosis for endometriosis is about 9 years. So that's just astounding. So many women suffer for many years without realizing even what their actual diagnosis is. And one of the issues we've been struggling with is that the treatments for endometriosis have been so costly and have so many side effects that doctors have been hesitant to even use effective therapy. So there have been many new therapies. There have been, for many years in the areas of osteoporosis and infertility, we've been using these SERMs, these selective estrogen receptor modulators. And now in the area of endometriosis, we've got these, I call them SPERMs, but selective progesterone receptor modulators. And so compounds that work on the progesterone receptors. And There are a couple that have been in a research trial, but one that we worked with that has just now published some of their data and is moving through the research process. It's not quite ready to be released or anything like that, but I think showing a lot of different promise. The drug danazol that has also been used for many years for the treatment of endometriosis is also being studied in different formulations to make it more tolerable. So I think there's a lot of excitement in terms of new endometriosis therapies.
Okay. We have another caller here to talk with. This is someone who is in Danville, and we'll talk with them. It's line number two. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I am a 35-year-old woman, and I was recently diagnosed with having hypothyroidism, and it definitely concerned me. I feel like I'm generally healthy. I try my best to eat right and to exercise, and my physician wasn't really able to give me any reason as to why I have this issue. Can you just provide me with just a brief information regarding hypothyroidism and where should I look for additional answers? Because I haven't, I'm supposed to give her an answer as to am I going to take the medication that she believes that I should be on, but I just didn't feel comfortable. I take no medication now, and I just wanted some additional information.
Well, David already started this show out with, we don't treat over the phone, but I'm going to treat you over the phone. Take your medicine.
Really?
Well, the thyroid gland makes a hormone called thyroid, and the thyroid gland is controlled by a higher order gland called the pituitary, which makes TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. It's very easy to measure the TSH in our blood as a quick check on how our thyroid gland is doing, and very inexpensively, very accurately, and we can easily monitor when and how our thyroid gland is functioning. The thyroid is necessary for many functions. It controls our metabolism. It controls essentially how our muscles work, how our heart beats, how our brain thinks. We need our thyroid gland to function well. Women do better in pregnancy with a stable thyroid. Women control their weight better. It affects our nails, our skin, our hair, our weight.
And all those things.
All those things that you will want to have under control. We don't always know why the thyroid gland misfunctions when it does. We know as we age, it's very, very common, particularly in women, to have the thyroid gland malfunction. We know that that it can malfunction for a couple of different reasons. Number one, those cells can be affected by a virus. So there are transient conditions, believe it or not, where you have tests and things are poorly functioning, and sure enough, you get tested at some point in the future and everything is fine. And it was some sort of mild viral condition that does go away. Not so common. Usually it's just where the gland just stops functioning, either due to natural aging process of the gland or some what we call idiopathic, meaning doctors don't know, condition. There are also what we call autoimmune conditions where we develop antibodies to lots of glands in our body. And so if other things aren't going right, then we start testing for other endocrine disorders. Not so common. Usually just slightly low thyroid is a fairly isolated thing that young women can have for years and years and years. Usually as you get older, you will need more medicine, but it's a fairly easy condition to monitor. So they basically, you measure, you're low, they supplement you with the medication, they remeasure. If you test in normal range, you're feeling well, you're good. They just measure you every so often. whatever your physician decides is going to be a good regimen for you. And then depending on what happens, if somebody was pregnancy planning, I probably would make sure that that level is good going into their pregnancy. And that's what I mean for things like our fertility studies or anybody coming in trying to get pregnant. We try to get all their medicines in an optimal range. When you're newly pregnant, if you happen to be trying to get pregnant, we expand our blood volume half again. So women run around with about 4 liters of blood circulating in their body. And when we're in mid-pregnancy, we have about 6 liters of blood circulating in our body. So it's important, you know, we have this dilution thing going on, so it's important to adjust all medicines. So things like that can occur. If we gain a little bit of weight, lose a little bit of weight, that dilution thing can affect our blood levels. So it is important to get medicines like thyroid monitored. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's not very difficult to adjust thyroid. But if it becomes difficult for whatever reason, your case becomes special, endocrinologists specialize in helping generalists control that condition. Mm-hmm. And it's really better to treat it than let yourself go untreated. People with untreated thyroid sometimes have cold and heat intolerance and other things that aren't pleasant.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Irregular periods. If I didn't mention that in the list, maybe I did.
You didn't, but thanks.
Okay.
Very good. Hope that's helpful. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Suzanne Troopen. She is an obstetrician and a gynecologist. And once a month here, or every other month, she's here on the program. It's on a Monday. And we talk about women's health. And I know, again, as we've said, if you have a question about your own health, you call in here and she will do her best to help you out. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. And again, we have someone here calling from Champaign on our line one. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Troopen. I had a question about if you can address some information on perhaps any natural alternatives to helping with health issues like thyroid or endometriosis.
Well, again, it depends on who you are and what you are. Always anything that you do to improve your immune system usually helps whatever your medical condition is. And there are multiple ways to help improve your immune system. Of course, you don't smoke. And of course, you get a decent amount of rest. There are, it's very important to have good nutrition. And as we were talking about before, I don't know if you were listening, but very often it's not possible through a basic diet in terms of your basic food and food preparation and the types of foods that we have access to always get all the nutrients in that you think that you're going to get in. So that's where vitamins and supplements come in. And we think that a basic vitamin, it can be very important for your health. Now, then the next realm in terms of supplements that I think that has been very well established is getting omega-3s in. And the traditional ways to get extra omega-3s in through our diet has always been in foods that we don't eat a lot of, you know, deep water fishes and things like that. So flaxseed oil and foods like that have extra omega-3s is one way, but any fish oil supplements are ways to get extra omega-3s into your diet. And then there's been an explosion of new information about using supplements, and there are many supplements out there, and using supplements not just for, say, in a general way, but more specific way. And we have a local firm, and I do sell one of their products at my Hada Cosmetic Medicine skin place that has to do with improving skin, but it's a place called Nutrifunk Foods. I think they're over in Southwest Champaign, but I don't know of all the science behind all of their products, but they use the science of food. It's two PhD nutrition researchers who have gotten into the science of food supplements, and with that specifically helping various conditions. So it could be your thyroid, it could be endometriosis and pelvic pain, it could be back pain, it could be joint pains, it could be conditions like MRSA. They have a skin spray. I have not seen actual scientific papers by them. Actually, some of the U of I athletes have used some of their products, I know, over time. And I've had various individuals use their products, and they use things like blueberry extracts and oregano and food, not the kinds of supplements that would be, say, illegal supplements. And I think that is definitely, at least from my way of thinking, a very beneficial, positive kind of alternative therapy that would be very safe, reasonable cost way to go for these kinds of therapies, and safe for somebody who's pregnancy planning.
Okay. One more at least. We have a caller in Sullivan, line two. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to speak with you. I believe I have hypothyroidism. It runs heavily in my mom's side of the family. My mom has it. My grandma has it. My aunt has it. I have all the symptoms. I have hair loss. I have dry skin. I'm extremely tired. My body temperature is about a degree lower than normal. And I unfortunately do not have health insurance. I've been taking a thyroid supplement that has some iodine in it to try to boost my thyroid. And I just wondered if there's any advice you can give me for people who might not be able to afford to go to the doctors and have the blood testing done.
Well, I know in our community we are somewhat blessed by having Francis Nelson Health Center, which does serve the underserved. And I know that many communities around the state do have areas that they different clinics that do have areas that serve patients. And I think one thing that we're moving towards in healthcare is trying to maximize the dollars spent. And for an individual who thinks they have thyroid problems, getting a basic thyroid test can be a very affordable test. It's as medical tests go, it's a very affordable test. And I'm not even sure, but it could be that even Planned Parenthood's would offer that sort of testing on a need-based basis.
I've actually asked them, and they don't.
Oh.
And the doctor that I'm seeing told me it'd be about $1,000 to have to test on.
I'm not sure who you talk to, and I don't know, but off the top of my head, I would say that our test would be about $50. So
really?
I'm the worst one to ask about. If somebody shoots me an email, I can get the exact cost, but you're not. Somebody's misquoted the cost of that test.
Okay. Well, wonderful. I guess, I'll keep looking, and maybe I'll look more up in the Champaign area. Maybe it's just more expensive than Sullivan.
Okay.
I think probably getting tested is the best way to go, because the symptoms can be symptoms of various conditions.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you
so much. Thank you. We have a couple of minutes left. I don't know if there are any other particular things that you would like to talk about.
I was going to talk a little bit about the Libigel. I didn't know if I had covered this previously. I get a little more lost when I'm only doing it every other month. I should keep my notes a little bit better. But there is a gel that is a testosterone gel that is the same 300 milligram dose of the Intrinsa patch. There is a patch therapy for the treatment of sexual dysfunction in menopausal females that is approved for treatment in Europe. It was studied in the United States and was not approved by the FDA in the United States because the FDA decided there wasn't enough meaningful sexual intercourse improvement for menopausal females, even though they had an increase in their libido. So their company decided not to approve it. But there is a company, Biosante, which is actually in Lincoln, Shire, Illinois, that is running a 5-year clinical trial on Libigel, which is essentially the same dose, but it is a topical gel formulation rather than a patch. So you don't have the sticky patch site reaction of a patch. So they decide to go with their patch, and they have negotiated a pre-study approval agreement with the FDA. And they are specifically going to study patients that have cardiovascular risk factors, so patients that have either hypertension or cholesterol or are 70 years of age or older. And they are going to specifically study this group of patients over 5-year period of time, looking at specific safety and efficacy endpoints to establish whether or not this gel would be safe in this population of patients. Of course, looking at breast cancer over this 5-year period of time, we do not anticipate that the breast cancer rate will be any different than the placebo breast cancer rate. And again, a very exciting development for women who currently have no treatment for low sexual function, even though men have many, many treatments for poor sexual function. So we're excited about that if women are interested in that study.
Okay. And just real quick, I just thought I'd ask you about the HPV, human papillomavirus vaccine, which is now being recommended for girls.
Yes.
Are we at some point getting any closer to making that same recommendation for that boys should be getting into?
Well, I would assume that we are closer. A lot has to do with FDA regulatory approval. It from the very beginning, it was always given in boys and girls in Australia. And it has been approved for boys in other countries now as well. And they have published the data that it does prevent genital warts in boys. And so from that standpoint, we can show some actual benefit in boys. One of the problems in our country in terms of approval is that our drug approvals have always been based on direct benefit for the individuals involved rather than benefit for somebody else. So I think we're getting closer. And I hope we will see that in the near future.
All right. Well, thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it. Dr. Suzanne Truppen, she's an OBGYN. She's on our program every other month. By the way, programs here on WYL, not just this one, but programs here are made possible by Women's Health Practice and by Dr. Truppen, offering obstetrics, gynecology, and fertility services. More information available at 356-3736. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan for State of Illinois employees and is accepting new patients. That's it for us. We want you to stay tuned, though. Up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll talk about computers. Our guest will be Peter Kimball of the Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. He'll join us at 1:06. We'll take your questions about computers. It's a topic we take up once a month, computers and you. Let's turn our attention now to the commodity markets. In Kansas City, December wheat is trading at 570 and a half, down 22 and three quarters. March, 589, down 18 and a half. In Chicago, December wheat, 539, down 15 and a quarter. March, 557, down 17 and a half. December corn, 384 and three quarters, up 4 and a half. March, 401 and a quarter, up 4 and a quarter. May, 413 and a half, up 5. July, 423, up 3 and a quarter. January soybeans, 912, up 16. March, 920, up 15. May, 922, up 6 and a quarter. July, 941, up 17. December meal, 271 even, up